19. Lydia. Washed, her hair woven into a tight braid that she twisted into a knot at the back of her head, Lydia walked next to Quindor in the midst of their escort as they made their way to the palace. Emmy came with them. Bundled in a thick woolen cloak that must have been taken from one of the High Lord's homes, she skipped next to Quindor, his gloved hand clutched in hers. She chattered the entire time, switching from topic to topic in the way children do, appearing for all the world like a happy young girl. And though the Grandmaster could see as well as Lydia that she was a walking corpse, he pandered to her, answering her endless questions with seemingly no end of patience. The guards in their escort, however, kept a healthy distance from Emmy, watching her as much as they did their surroundings. The fortifications of the palace, always strong, had been bolstered in the few hours since the king's return. Archers patrolled the tops of the wall, eyes watchful, and at its base, at least 100 men stood in the gap between the wall and a secondary barrier that had been built of sharpened stakes pointed outwards. At the sight of Quindor, the soldiers moved a section of it to allow them passage, the guards at the actual gates again confirming their identities before allowing them inside. The grounds themselves were filled with tents, soldiers and camp followers moving between them, and Lydia suspected the barracks connected to the palace must be full to the brim. "Do they have water?" she asked Quindor during a break in Emmy's chatter. "Food?"
"The king is aware of how the blight infects,"
the Grandmaster answered, his clipped tone suggesting he saw the same danger as she did.
"Food and water are being brought in from Abin Harrow."
Even so, having this many in Mudare was folly. All it took was one of the blighted willfully tampering with a water barrel, and the disease would sweep through the ranks like wildfire. And these weren't common citizens, but armed and trained soldiers who knew how to fight. Trying to purge their ranks of blighters wouldn't just be difficult, it might well be impossible.
"He needs to send them away," she said softly. "This is no place for an army."
"It is not your place to give advice to a king,"
Quindor answered.
"You will speak when spoken to and answer only questions posed to you. Is that understood?"
The only thing she understood was that stymieing good advice for the sake of protocol was willful stupidity. But Killian, at least, would listen to her. And the king would surely listen to the man he'd put in command of his armies. A servant wearing crimson and gold livery met them at the palace entrance, bowing to Quindor and Lydia.
"The king will see you straight away, marked ones."
While the wreckage and bodies had been removed from the palace, along with the blood-stained carpets, little else had been done to repair the damages inflicted the night of the ball. A strong smell of smoke permeated the air from the fire in the ballroom. The walls and floors bore deep gouges, and there was a strange lack of furniture, though whether it had been stolen by the civilians or removed because it had been damaged, she didn't know. The servant led them down the hallway to the council chambers, and Lydia's gaze latched on the scorpion gilded onto the heavy wood doors. The armored guards outside eyed her and Quindor, deemed them not a threat, and their attention returned to the corridor beyond. The servant entered the chamber. Lydia faintly heard him announce them, and then the door swung fully open to reveal the room. She'd seen the inside before, only at a glance, but she swiftly marked the changes that had been made. Gone was the large table inlaid with a map of Mudamora, and the heavy chairs that had encircled it, each with the symbol of a great house carved into their backs. In their place was a narrow crimson carpet that led to a dais, on which sat a throne of oak and gold. Sarek Rowanus, king of Mudamora, sat on the throne,
his elbows resting on the arms of the chair, fingers steepled. Standing before him were several men, one of whom she recognized as High Lord Damashir. There was a tall woman, dressed in a long tunic cinched at her waist by a sword belt, her dark hair twisted into a knot, the base shaved to reveal a falcon tattoo. Even before she turned to regard them, Lydia knew this must be High Lady Falorn. But none of them were Killian. Why isn't he here? She and Quindor approached, both of them bowing low when they reached the dais.
Grandmaster,
the king said to Quindor. Then his amber gaze flicked to Lydia.
Marked one.
Despite his scrutiny, Lydia found her gaze drawn to the older woman standing behind his right shoulder, instantly recognizing Cinta, the king's personal healer. Her white robes were pristine, her forehead marked with the half-moon tattoo. Her gray-laced dark hair hung in a simple braid over one shoulder, and her upturned eyes had deep crow's feet at the corners. The last time Lydia had seen her had been right before Killian had been speared in the side at Alder's Ford. The healer's nose wrinkled at the sight of Emmy.
That thing is dead. Why you keep it as a pet is a mystery to me, Grandmaster, but at the very least you should keep it in chains.
Emmy began to cry, and Quindor patted her absently on the shoulder.
Cruelty is unnecessary, Cinta. While her mind might be gone, the body you see once belonged to a little girl with a good heart. For that girl's sake, we will treat her with kindness.
Cinta made a noise of disgust, but the king stepped off his dais, brow furrowed as he inspected Emmy. Reaching out, he wiped the tears from her cheeks, then shook his head.
She appears to me a normal girl, Quindor. You're certain she's dead?
Quite. There is no more life in her than the stones beneath your feet, Your Grace.
I don't feel dead.
Emmy wiped her nose on her sleeve, looking pleadingly up at the king.
Please don't let her put me in chains, Your Grace. I'll be good, I promise.
King Sarek's lips drew into a thin line.
I see you,
he said softly.
And I will burn every last one of your puppets to ash. I swear it in the names of the Six.
A terrified little scream tore from Emmy's lips, and she twisted away to bury her face in Quindor's robes, her shoulders shaking. And despite knowing this was the corruptor at work, it was all Lydia could do not to demand the king to cease in his cruelty. Mercifully, Quindor gestured to one of the guards that had accompanied them.
Take her to one of the sitting rooms to wait. Have the servants bring her something sweet to eat.
And as the man led the weeping Emmy away, Lydia saw she wasn't the only one moved by the girl. Nearly everyone in the room looked ready to leap to her defense.
Your return to Mudaire is unexpected, Your Grace,
Quindor said once the door closed again.
I was of the belief you intended to travel to Rotan to address the border war with Anacostra.
Sarek waved a dismissive hand.
Plans change. I've sent my niece Rhea instructions on how to manage the situation in Rotan, as well as the resources she needs to see it done. My place is in Mudaire, for this is where the true enemy resides, lurking behind the faces of my subjects. It must be expunged.
Hunted down. Killed. Murdered. Burned. With respect, Your Majesty, Lydia said. We should be dedicating our time to finding a cure for those who have been poisoned with blight, because trying to erase it by killing those who have succumbed is a battle we won't win. One of Sarek's eyebrows rose.
I understand Hegiria's temple does not have adequate numbers of soldiers to hunt the blighters, Marked One. That is why I have brought the royal army to Mudaire.
All that will accomplish is more infections, she argued. Except it won't be infected civilians, but rather trained fighting men. You need to—
Be silent, girl! Quindor snapped. You overstep.
She's earned the right to speak.
The king gestured to Lydia.
Continue.
All eyes were on her, and Lydia's palms turned clammy. You need to withdraw all except those required to enforce a perimeter around the city. And instead of hunting those who are infected, we need to focus our effort on finding a cure.
Cinta huffed out a loud breath.
They're dead, you silly little girl. They can't be healed. And if we don't hunt them, how long until the entire city is full of them and your perimeter is overrun?
They don't die the second they're exposed to the blight. Lydia snapped, then clenched her teeth, knowing she needed to mind her tone. There are several painful hours between the moment of exposure and the moment they succumb, which means there are several hours within which they could be healed if we could figure out how. But no one is going to come to us for help if they believe we'll just kill them and be done with it. Quindor said,
I tried to heal the late princess's horse when it was infected. And likewise, I tried to save High Lord Torrington when he became infected drinking contaminated wine.
He shook his head.
Doing so nearly killed me. It can't be done. Heartbreaking as it is, putting the infected down is the only solution. And a mercy because it prevents the corruptor from using their bodies for evil. And of course, once they are dead, they are lost to us. One cannot heal death.
Just because it's not a simple solution doesn't mean—
I agree with the Grand Master, Your Majesty,
Cinta interrupted.
The girl is young, inexperienced, and—
Compassionate,
the king said.
As one of Hegiria's marked should be. Your many years may have given you wisdom and experience, Cinta, but they've jaded you as well.
Cinta's eyes flared, her fingers curling into fists. And out of the corner of her eye, Lydia saw High Lady Falorn's hand close over the hilt of her sword.
I do not like consigning Mutamorians to death. For that reason, if no other, I see merit in what Lydia suggests.
Your Grace,
Quindor protested.
Already we have too few resources. I understand the allure of Lydia's proposal, but to pull healers from the hunt for the sake of pursuing this task could have catastrophic results.
Sarek held up his hands, making soothing gestures at Quindor.
At ease, Grand Master. I understand the predicament. Which is why Lydia will undertake the research herself.
Herself? It wasn't the amount of work that troubled her, or even the danger, but rather that there were others who knew so much more than she did. What chance did she have of coming up with a solution on her own?
It's not safe,
Quindor said between his teeth.
What if one of the infected kills her, or one of their family members? I'd ask that you reconsider, Your Grace.
Silence fell across the room, the tension so thick that Lydia could scarcely breathe. Then King Sarek said,
The gods themselves ordained that I should lead Mutamora's marked to best serve their ends.
Lydia's skin crawled, but there was nothing else to do but to nod.
I think it best you get underway, Marked One,
the king said.
I expect regular updates on your progress.
Despite knowing she was pushing her luck, Lydia asked, What of withdrawing the majority of the royal army and quarantining the city?
I shall think on it,
he answered,
and speak with my commanders. But military matters are neither your expertise nor your concern. Lydia, you may go. Quindor, remain.
Lydia bowed again, then backed away 3 steps before turning, it taking all her self-control not to run from the room. Vaguely, she heard a woman say,
"Excuse me a moment, Your Grace. I need to piss."
But the words went in one of Lydia's ears and out the other, her mind all for her own problems. What had she gotten herself into? And how in the name of the Six was she supposed to accomplish anything meaningful on her own? And would any of it even matter if the royal army succumbed? What she needed to do was find Killian. He'd listen, and he'd have the power to sway the king in a way that she didn't. She started toward the entrance to the palace, intent on seeking him out in the army camp on the grounds, but then a female voice caught her attention.
"He's not here."
Whirling around, Lydia found herself face to face with High Lady Falorn.
"You're looking for Killian, I know."
She caught Lydia by the arm and towed her up the stairs instead of toward the door.
"You think he'll take you seriously where Sarek did not, which is probably true. Unfortunately, he's on his way to Rotan with a portion of the royal army. So you'll have to make do with me."
"Killian isn't here." Disappointment hollowed out her insides, and Lydia bit her bottom lip hard in an effort to maintain her composure. Not only wasn't he here, he was on his way to the opposite side of Mudamora. Stopping in front of a door, the High Lady unlocked it, then motioned for Lydia to go inside. It was one of the many guest rooms in the palace, and given the upper level hadn't been subjected to the sacking the rest of the building had endured, still possessed all its fine furnishings and decor. The sitting room had two large sofas upholstered in red and gold fabric, with a delicate wooden table between them. Thick carpets layered the stone floor, and the open windows were flanked by velvet drapery. In the corner, a suit of armor sat in pieces on one of the chairs, a dented shield with a scraped image of a falcon leaning against it. On the table next to it, she counted no fewer than 6 daggers of varying length, and underneath rested a bow case and stuffed quiver.
"Have a seat."
The High Lady gestured to the sofas.
"Care for a drink?"
"Water, if you have it, Your Grace," Lydia answered, perching on one of the sofas and wondering why the woman had brought her here.
"Unless we're around Sarek and his fools, you can call me Dorina."
Going to the window, she swung open the glass, the curtains billowing wildly on the breeze. With little regard for the deadly drop to the ocean beneath her, she stood on the window frame, stretching up to retrieve a cooking pot. As she jumped back into the room, she said,
"I don't have much faith that what we're being served is pure."
She went to the roaring fire and sat the metal pot over the flames, watching as the snow melted. "You're marked," Lydia said. "The blight can't infect you." Dorina turned to look at her, raising one eyebrow.
"You positive about that?"
Lydia hesitated. "It hasn't happened yet."
"I tempt fate often enough as it is without drinking poisoned water. Here."
She dipped a cup into the pot, then handed it to Lydia.
"Drink as much as you like. I've 6 more basins collecting snow on the ledge."
"Thank you." Lydia sipped at the water, which tasted far cleaner and fresher than any she'd had at the temple, watching the High Lady as she took the seat across from her. She was perhaps 30 years old, and the illustration in Treatise had not done her beauty justice. Lydia suspected there wasn't an artist in the world who could, because there was something in the woman's motion, in the weight of her presence, that couldn't be captured with paint or ink. It reminded her of Killian.
"If I might ask, why do you think the king sent
Lord Calorian to Rotan?" Dorina grinned, her upturned green eyes creasing at the corners.
"Killian is no more for formality than I am, and I rather suspect you two are past that point already. Am I right?"
Heat crawled up Lydia's chest, her cheeks burning.
"We're friends."
"It's always good to be friends with your lover."
Lydia felt her eyes pop, and she stammered. It's not like that. You've misinterpreted. She clamped her teeth down to stop the babble flowing from her lips. We are just friends. The High Lady's shoulders shook with silent laughter.
He reacted much the same way when I pressed him, if it makes you feel any better. Known him his entire life, and not once have I seen him lose his head over a...
She smirked.
Friend.
Crossing her arms, Lydia leveled the High Lady with a steady stare. I trust that you had greater reason to abandon the conversation between the Grand Master and the King than to satisfy your curiosity over the nature of my relationship with Lord Calorian. Darina burst out laughing.
Oh my, I can see why he values your friendship so highly. Though in truth, I saw why the moment you went head-to-head with the King over the Blighted.
Taking a sip of her water, the High Lady leaned back against the cushion, resting a booted foot on one knee.
To answer your question, the Anak have always raided the Rowanus gold mines, but apparently they've taken advantage of our preoccupation with Darren and increased their efforts. Sarek's argument is that Mutamora needs that gold to rebuild and to support those who've lost everything to the war, but I think it's more to do with the fact that it's his lands and mines they are thieving from. It's a blow to his pride.
That's a ridiculous reason, Lydia scowled. What sort of king makes decisions based on such vanity?
All of them?
Darina answered.
And if you think Sarek's bad, you'd have been horrified if you'd met my brother. Kings, as a rule, are a vainglorious lot. And given the Mutamorian monarchy is little more than a popularity contest among the 12 houses, our kings are the worst.
His strategies certainly are. Lydia knew her tone was sour, but didn't care. The method of dealing with the Blighted that he and Quindor have come up with is flawed.
And that,
Darina leveled a finger at Lydia,
is the reason I'm here. Because I think what you have to say is more important than the words spewing from the mouths of the men we left in that throne room.
She scowled, then gave a slight shake of her head.
Tell me your opinion of what should be done.
Part of Lydia hesitated. She didn't know this woman, and she was not one to give her trust easily. Especially not to strangers. Except she knew that Killian trusted Darina, and that had to count for something. Cinta and Quindor are likely correct that there is no cure. The Blighters are dead, their bodies nothing more than puppets animated by the Corruptor. Although, given they retain memory and skill, I think some part of them remains.
Their souls? If that's the case, isn't Quindor correct that it's a mercy to give them a final death?
Maybe. Lydia took a sip of her water. But there are consequences to us doing so. Darina regarded her silently, waiting. When I look at one of the Blighters, I can see they are dead because of my mark, Lydia explained. But those around them, their friends and family, they don't see that. All they see is the person they love being killed in the most gruesome manner imaginable, by their own countrymen, with one of the marked who is supposed to be protecting them passing the sentence. She swallowed hard. And they hate us for it. I don't think it will be long until they start taking steps to protect loved ones they know have been sick, hiding them and attempting to sneak them out of the city, if they haven't already.
Gods, the Corruptor is insidious in his methods,
Darina muttered, then her eyes fixed on Lydia's.
You're giving me problems, but no solutions. And if there is to be hope of Sarek listening to you, solutions are what need to be coming out of your mouth. Remember, he wants to win this.
I don't have a solution. Lydia balled her hands into fists. But not searching for one isn't the answer. We need to understand how the Blight infects people and try to find a way to cure people before they die from it. So you need patients who are infected but still alive?
Yes, but no one in their right mind will volunteer.
Darina rubbed her chin, her eyes distant.
Not unless they were told they'd be safe by someone they trust.
Tugging on her white robe, Lydia said, Not me, and not you.
No, it has to be someone who is one of them.
Rising, Darina went and opened the door. Leaning out in the hall, she put her fingers to her lips and whistled sharply. A few moments later, Lydia picked up the sound of boots coming down the hallway.
I've some girls who might be able to help,
the High Lady said.
Double advantage in that you already know them.
A heartbeat later, Gwen and Lena appeared in the doorway, smiles breaking onto their faces at the sight of her. Formerly members of Malahai's personal guard, it had been Lena who'd told Killian of Malahai's plots. And while the results of that revelation had been far from ideal, that didn't change that her friend had sided with her over the queen. Rising to her feet, Lydia crossed the room and wrapped her arms around them.
Gods, it's good to see you both. What are you doing here?
Lena grinned, her copper-colored ponytail bouncing.
We work for the High Lady now. All of Malahai's bodyguard does, except for Sonya. She went with General Calorian to Rotan.
The knowledge that the Gamdeshian woman was with him eased the tension in her chest almost as much as having Lena and Gwen with her now.
I'm assigning you two to assist Lydia in her research as well as to watch her back,
Darina said.
You'll remain with her at Hegiria's temple until I say otherwise. Understood?
Both girls saluted sharply.
I'll leave you to it,
Darina said.
If I stay away much longer, Sarek will send someone to see if I fell in the privy.
She started to leave, but Lydia caught hold of her arm. Will you try to convince him to send the royal army away?
The High Lady's jaw tightened. I'll try, but he's not inclined to listen to me.
Make him listen. Lydia felt her vanquished tension return. Not only could the king end up with an army full of blighters, without healers to identify them, he might not realize it until it's too late.